Well, as the COP30 climate talks continue in Brazil, Matt Keane is chair of the climate change here in Australia and former New South Wales Liberal Treasurer and has just arrived for the COP in Belém in Brazil. Matt Keane, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Sally, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Is there a sense of an ability to make progress at this COP, or is there a sense that things might be stalling globally?
Well, that's certainly the sense that I get from the small amount of time that I've had on the ground. I mean, the world has not raised the white flag just because the White House has. Remember, key regions in the US have retained their net zero goals, including California, with its 2045 target, and their economy would be the world's fourth largest if it were a separate nation. So betting against California over the past century wouldn't have served you well. COPs are a gathering of the world to show that the world is still overwhelmingly committed to this, and it does make a difference. I mean, just remember back in Copenhagen in 2009, the world was on track for a warming rate somewhere between 4 and 5 degrees, which I see others have pointed out recently. COP in 2015 secured almost 200 nations' signatures to that greater ambition. And as a result of that effort, we've bent the curve and we're on track to keep global warming to about 2.5 degrees. So these gatherings are important. They do make a difference. And what I'm seeing so far is continued momentum towards lowering emissions.
We are seeing, as you were saying, that the White House is not engaged. We've also seen China not willing to lock into significant targets either. What hope is there for smaller countries if some of the big players don't want to play ball?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of hope. We've seen the European Union recently announce an increased level of ambition. We've seen the United Kingdom announce an increased level of ambition. And our very own country have lifted their ambition. So there is continued momentum. And at a conference like this, you're seeing that notwithstanding what you read in some of the domestic media and hear from some of the domestic politicians, the rest of the world is moving. And this is a global mega trend, which Australia should be part of because it's in our economic interest to do so.
What do you think about the argument that Australia produces only 1% of the world's emissions and that it shouldn't go through the economic pain of transition? It shouldn't be carrying that weight.
Well, that is the correct argument that we produce about 1% of emissions directly, but the tally is closer to about 4% of global emissions when our exports of fossil fuels are taken into account. And what I would say is that Australia has few peers when it comes to renewable energy resources. So managed well, we can decarbonise our power grid and our broader economy more rapidly and more cheaply than almost any other nation. And in doing so, we can set ourselves up for more investment into our country, more jobs into our country, and stronger economic growth. So the global effort to decarbonise the economy is to Australia's advantage. And that's a debate that's being lost domestically when you hear from some actors that are putting vested interests ahead of the national interest. Clearly, it's in Australia's national interest to leverage our abundant renewable energy resources, which give us some of the cheapest electricity anywhere in the world, which can underwrite a renewal or a renaissance of energy-intensive industries like steel manufacturing or aluminium smelting. That means more jobs, means more investment and more economic growth for our country.
When you're talking about those who are putting partisan interests in ahead of the national interest, what do you mean?
Oh, well, we've seen this week the Nationals looking to drop net zero and the Liberals are playing along with them. What I would say is that that's hugely disappointing. It's not in the national interest. And let me be very clear, the important policies of our nation, whether it be Medicare, whether it be the NDIS or superannuation or addressing the COVID pandemic, have worked better with bipartisanship at a national level between the two major political parties. And addressing the climate challenge exceeds the degree of difficulty of both of those, all of those policies that I talked about by a long way. So we're talking about a multi-generational task, literally, because our kids and their kids will bear the consequences of how we act, or in the case of ditching net zero, how we did it. Delay is just another form of denial, Sally, because every extra tonne of carbon dioxide we emit accumulates heat in the atmosphere. So actually avoiding that one tonne today is actually a lot more important than avoiding it in a decade's time. So if you're planning something for your home or you're an investor in a business, you're more likely to proceed with the spending if you're confident the policies aren't going to change. And those people walking away from Australia's commitments to this global effort, which happen to be in Australia's economic advantage, what they're doing is stopping investment coming into our country, stopping jobs coming into our country, and stopping future economic growth that will benefit our country. So it's very disappointing, Sally.
What do you think of the argument from some members of the Liberal and National parties that power prices have become more expensive in Australia, and that particularly rural and regional Australia is disproportionately bearing the burden of some of the costs and changes when it comes to transition?
Well, the argument about renewables being responsible for increasing electricity prices is just dishonest, and it should be called out at every opportunity. The reason our power prices are going up, according to the Australian Energy Market Commission, is because we're having a disorderly transition, because the inputs into our coal generation and gas generation are pegged to world prices, and they are going through the roof, largely following the invasion of Ukraine, which has sent fossil fuel prices through the roof, and that's feeding through to consumer bills. So the problem is not too many renewables in the electricity system, Sally. It's not enough. And the sooner we get more renewables into the electricity grid, the sooner we'll see Australian consumers and businesses benefit from an orderly transition. With regard to our rural and regional communities, of course we should be aware of the impacts that this transition is having on them. And of course we should be working towards making sure that the impact is as minimal as possible. But this is nation-building infrastructure, and we need to get on with the job of delivering nation-building infrastructure, whether it be our metros in the cities, where, don't forget, not everyone supported them either. We needed to work with communities to ensure we moderate the impacts on communities that host that nation-building infrastructure, but get on with building it so we can all benefit from it. That's what we've done in the cities when it comes to metros and road projects. And that's what we're going to continue to need to do when it comes to modernising our electricity system, working with communities to ensure that they reap the benefits and are protected from some of the impacts of them.
Just finally, Matt Keane, how do you see the electoral future for the Liberal Party at the federal level if it dumps net zero?
Look, I'm now the chair of the Independent Climate Change Authority. I'm still a proud Liberal, but I'm not going to comment on a specific political party, other than to say, at the last federal election, those parties advocating for poor climate policies, they got thumped. They got thumped. Just look at the Labor government's majority in the House of Representatives, one of the biggest that we've seen. They clearly had strong climate policies, and they clearly were upfront about their plans for energy transition, and they were rewarded at the ballot box. The coalition didn't lose votes to the right to right-wing parties advocating for walking away from net zero or walking away from renewables. One Nation didn't pick up seats at the coalition's disadvantage. In fact, the Teals picked up seats. So ignoring the community's desire for stronger climate action and a responsible economic and energy transition sees political parties impacting the ballot box. And that's what the coalition just saw at the last election. So I think that a lesson that I took from New South Wales politics is strong climate policies with strong energy policies is rewarded at the ballot box. The New South Wales Liberal and Nationals didn't lose a single seat to the Teals, particularly at the same time as the federal coalition was wiped out in those same seats at the federal level. So there's a lesson there to be learned in the New South Wales context, and that is strong and economically rational climate and energy policies will be rewarded at the ballot box. Not having those policies will see coalition parties impacted adversely.
Matt Keane, we'll need to leave it there. Thank you for your time from Brazil this morning.
Thank you very much, Sally.
Matt Keane is the chair of the Climate Change Authority and former New South Wales Liberal Treasurer.